This is All of It. I'm David First. Yesterday, the 2024 Whitney Biennial opened to the public. The Biennial is always a must-see show in the New York contemporary art world. It is the longest-running survey of American art in the U.S., and every 2 years, it's an opportunity for the museum to take stock of some of the most creative and boundary-pushing artists in America. Artists who reflect the times we're living through. This biennial, 71 artists are included in the show. They come from a wide variety of backgrounds, making all kinds of work from short films and sculpture to abstract painting. The 2024 Whitney Biennial is called Even Better Than the Real Thing. It's on view through August 11th, and with us now are the curators, Chrissy Isles and Meg Only. Welcome to WNYC.
Hi, David. Thank you so much for having us.
The title of the show, Even Better Than the Real Thing. Meg, tell us about this title. What does that tell us about the exhibition that we're about to walk into?
Well, you know, in your last segment, David, Natasha was talking about, you know, detrimental political rhetoric. And it's one of the things that we're thinking a lot about with this title and with this exhibition. You know, over the past couple years, we've been seeing political rhetoric that's really questioning ideas of the real when it comes to gender, particularly around transgenderness and the gender-affirming laws that are being restricted. We wanted to think about that as a political backdrop, as well as, you know, the increase of artificial intelligence and questioning these ideas of real truth, evidence, as well as history.
I mean, curating the Whitney is no small feat, right?
It's not.
The show is a survey of American art in all media over the last 2 years. Do you feel that, you know, you need to curate a show that does everything, that helps define a period of time in our history and really captures something about the art of that time when you're working on a show like this?
I mean, it's certainly a heavy weight. You know, it's an amazing exhibition history. I'm deeply honored to be doing this show with Chrissy, who this is her third time curating a biennial. This is my first time. I think what we really wanted to do was sort of actually be in response to what artists were talking about. You know, what are artists reading? What are artists thinking about? The real process of this show began with Chrissy and I on a listening tour for the first 2 months, talking with artists, getting a sense of what they're interested in. And a lot of that brought us back to ideas of the body. And we are really surprised to sort of return to ideas of the body within all of its complexities.
What artists did you feel that you had to have in this show?
I felt like we had to have all the artists that we had in this show. But I think,
and
you know,
so many more.
It's, you know, I think, you know, artists you have to have. I think part of it is, you know, we really wanted to have a space that allowed artists to have breath within the installation. There's about 20 fewer artists within the actual physical aspect of the show. And then you have about something around 25 that are in a film program. And so for us, you know, we really were thinking about, once we went to install, who those maybe anchoring artists might be, or what those anchoring conversations might be. And so we really formed this around an intergenerational show. We have about five or six, I would say almost matriarchs of the show, who are in their 70s and 80s. And they really hold down some aspects of the conversation, from the artists Mary Kelly, Suzanne Jackson, Harmony Hammond, Takako Yamaguchi. We also have the amazing Mary Lovelace O'Neill, Pippa Garner, as well as Mavis Pusey, who sadly passed away in 2019.
Let's talk about the first piece that you see when you get off the elevator on the sixth floor. It's a wall with a black and white flower printed on it that leads straight into a video installation called Pollinator. Tell us about this piece and the artist who created it.
Yeah, that is a work by the filmmaker Tourmaline, a filmmaker and artist. You know, when we were thinking about this exhibition, we wanted really strong pieces that grab people directly off the elevator. If you've been in the Whitney before, you realize you're riding the elevator all the way up to the eighth floor. And so what pulls you out? Tourmaline's piece, Pollinator, is thinking about, you know, alternative forms of reproduction, ways of passing on legacies. And it's a beautiful film that's intermixed with her in the Brooklyn Gardens wearing a gorgeous floral headdress. And it's interspliced with archival images and archival footage of Marsha P. Johnson, the incredibly important activist's funeral, as well as images of Tourmaline's father from her youth. And so really thinking about ideas of inheritance, what it means to carry on and pass on through ways that aren't necessarily, let's say, gender normative.
We're also here with curator Chrissy Isles. Hello. And I wanted to ask you, Chrissy, when you began this process of planning this biennial, what were your conversations like, the themes you wanted to capture here? And did your ideas change as the months went along and you were planning this?
Hello. As a curator, you're very much like an antenna. You're tuning in to the waves of, you know, social, political, cultural developments around us in the world, and also how they connect to what artists are thinking about and working on. So Meg and I didn't go into our research for the exhibition with any particular themes in mind. We wanted just to listen. And one of the key things about being a curator of any biennial is that you are taking your usual curatorial practice and focusing it into a large-scale exhibition at top speed. And all curators of biennials have to be able to synthesize, you know, ideas and information, learn from, you know, our research, which happens so quickly, and create something meaningful. So what we did was really listen to artists. And then as we traveled around the country and also to major international group shows by fellow curators all over the world, we started to see a number of themes emerging that occur throughout the exhibition in very sort of intertwining ways.
Well, Chrissy, artificial intelligence has a bigger role in contemporary art than it did a few years ago. Even right now at the Whitney, there's an AI-centered exhibition on the floor above the biennial. How were you thinking about incorporating AI into this show as you prepared?
I mean, I think everything you see in this show, including AI, is very organically folded in. Maybe, Meg, you can talk to our new and extraordinary AI project with Holly Herndon and Matt Dryhurst, but that is not the only work involving AI in the exhibition. The exhibition isn't about things. It's really about the condition of living with or within things, whether it's structures of power, climate change, AI. And so we wanted to make a very haptic exhibition in which you really feel very present with all of the works, whether it's an AI work or whether it's a large-scale sculpture or a very small piece or an installation that envelops you. We wanted people to really engage with all of them through the space we created within the show, between the works, so that each work becomes a portal to the other. And people have already been telling us how much that's striking to them as they move through the show.
Meg, did you want to jump in on that too?
Yeah, really quick, David. I think some of it is, you know, AI is one of the cultural backdrops that we're responding to. We're also responding to, you know, the limitations, let's say, of legislation around gender-affirming care, the overturning of Roe v. Wade. You know, Chrissy mentioned Matt Dryhurst and Holly Herndon's project, which is called X Harry Mutant X. You know, Matt and Holly are really thinking a lot about the ideas of, you know, the limitation of oneself and one's identity online. I think a lot of the show is dealing with, let's say, the multidimensionality of oneself, oftentimes the ways that we're limited to be, let's say, a singular type of representation. And with Matt and Holly's project, they're trying to complicate what it means to be a person in the world, particularly online. Holly Herndon is quite well known as a musician. And when you Google her, she's been reduced very much to her interesting artistic red haircut, her blue eyes. And so they're working with an algorithm that's able to distort and think about, you know, what Holly Herndon, you know, could be based off of training data. I've, you know, searched myself on this project, which you can find on our Artport website, which is the digital component of the Whitney Museum. And a shout out to Christiane Paul for all of her work on this project with us, and as well as overseeing the digital wing. But, you know, it's really kind of thinking about ideas of who has authority to name and say who you are, who has representation of what we look like anymore. I think we all understand there's images online that we wish were not online of us, that we have no control over because we've opted into that.
All of that was fascinating. That sounds like a really interesting how we get reduced to a couple of things and a couple of labels and how some of these exhibits are playing with that and exploding out from that idea. We're going to speak more about this exhibition, Even Better Than the Real Thing, the 81st Whitney Biennial. It is open to the public now through August 1st, through August 11th. We're speaking with curators Chrissy Isles and Meg Only. We'll be back with more here on WNYC. You're listening to all of it here on WNYC. I'm David First. We're talking about the 81st Whitney Biennial. The Whitney Biennial. It opened to the public yesterday. It's called Even Better Than the Real Thing. And we're speaking with curators Chrissy Isles and Meg Only. Chrissy, there are 71 artists showing work in this show from a wide variety of backgrounds and practices, many of whom a wider audience may not have ever heard of before. How do you go about selecting and finding these artists, many of whom may be less known?
Well, the selection process is really also informed by not only our research for the biennial, but the ongoing work that Meg and I do. And Meg and I have been in dialogue with each other for a few years now, and would call each other every Friday during the pandemic and talk about art and exhibitions. And, you know, we're both very tuned in to contemporary artists. We both teach, so we're both very pedagogically inclined and thinking about and listening to young artists even while they're at art school. And we're not transactional curators. We're curators who really want to be part of a community and a long-term way of sort of having a discussion with artists that can sometimes go on for a decade or more and always begin somewhere. And so it was very challenging for us to do this in such a short space of time. But what we were doing was really intuitively sort of thinking about, talking with each other about and responding to is what we heard artists telling us. What we heard also coming out of the pandemic as people were moving back out into the world. And there's a lot of sort of psychological issues that the artists were telling us about. There's a lot of interest in psychoanalysis, the psychological implications of architectural space and systems of power. And you can see that throughout the exhibition. You know, also the site of the body, the idea of a site meaning what our body's relationship is to each other, to architecture, to our own interior structures. What is the psyche? What does it mean? So for in one example, Gut by the artist Jeff Fan, you can only see the sculpture by peering through holes in the wall, and then you can see the sculpture of the artist's gut, and this the gallery wall becomes almost like the skin or the exterior of the body, and we're peering into it, into a hidden space that's also a kind of symbolic space. You know, we talk about the gut holding our emotions or being our second brain. So there's lots of ways in which we were thinking about these ideas, listening to artists, and then placing them in conversation with each other. And we had a couple of artists who were in dialogue with almost as interlocutors throughout the process. One of those was the choreographer Ligia Lewis, whose works in the exhibition. And we were describing our ideas to her and what we were hearing and thinking about. And she said, you know, what you're describing sounds to me like a dissonant chorus. And so we were very struck by that, and we wanted to make a show where the audience feels like they're in the middle of that dissonant chorus, listening to all the different voices and having this experience that's not gazing at something, but listening to and experiencing and feeling it with your own body. And so that sense of creating a show as a set of relations is what we were thinking about when we brought the group of artists in the show together.
Well, Meg, one artist in this show will actually soon be a guest on all of it. Sculpture artist Rose B. Simpson has a few pieces in the biennial. Her sculptures will also be displayed in Madison Square Park and Inwood Hill Park starting in April, which is when she's going to be joining us. Can you give us a preview for our listeners about her work?
Yeah, of course. Rose B. Simpson is coming from an amazing legacy of clay workers. Her mother is also a sculptor. We had a chance to visit her museum while we were in New Mexico. And, you know, as Chrissy mentioned, you know, a lot of the show is thinking about ideas of relationality and relationships. We're tracing some of those through pedagogical lineages. We're also finding people who are in conversation with each other. For this exhibition, Rose wanted to create four sculptures that came together and represented, well, one, a self-portrait of herself that you see within the show, but also three important women within her life, all of which remain unnamed to us. And they are all facing each other directly in a on a pedestal that's shaped like a diamond, and their eyes are meeting each other. If you have seen Rose B. Simpson's work before, if you haven't, these are often stately sculptures that are usually taller than the self, with eyes that are hollow and peer directly out into the audience. They're very breathtaking, but they're also incredibly haunting. For this installation, Daughter's Revenant, they are actually facing each other. And so it's drawing their backs to the audience, directly engaging with each other, and thinking about the support that Rose has had from these three women within her life.
I want to ask about another one of the artists. One of the contributions in the show is from artist Suzanne Jackson in her 80s now. She currently lives in Savannah, Georgia. Chrissy, can you talk about her work? They're described as suspended paintings without canvas. Can you describe for listeners what in practice these pieces actually look like when we walk into the exhibit?
Yes, you know, painting is one of the most enduring mediums in art history. It's many hundreds of years old, and it's very resilient. And one of the things artists do is constantly challenge the idea of what painting is. Conventionally, it's a canvas stretched over a wooden or metal stretcher, and the artist will paint on it. In the 60s and 70s, artists were making shaped canvases or attaching chairs or other objects to canvases. And, you know, you can throw anything at a painting, and it's still a painting. And one of the things that defines a painting is that it's on the wall. That's almost more of a definition than whether it's stretched over a canvas or not. Well, what you see in the biennial is a large room of paintings by Suzanne, which are all hung from the ceiling in space. There's a couple of small ones that are hung against the wall, but the majority of them are hung in space. And they are literally just shimmering iridescent acrylic paint, which Suzanne's been using since the 1960s, that same paint. And she folds netting and other objects into the composition, but they have no visible means of support, and they don't have, in many cases, a front or a back surface. And so you're very much confronted with these processes of painting. And the works also move between figuration and abstraction. And so you're aware of a figure, one very long, beautiful painting dedicated to Mary Turner, who was lynched in 1918, is hanging just away from the end wall of the room. And Suzanne has covered the surface of this very long, almost Egon Schiele-like or Byzantine-like beautiful figure with garnets and bronze and gold. And she said, "I wanted to give Mary Turner what she should have had." And, you know, this figure is almost abstract, but the closer you get, the more figurative it becomes. So, you know, it's a very haptic experience moving through these paintings. She's choreographing us around them, and they're very translucent, and yet they hang both sort of delicate and also very strong. Sort of around us rather than us gazing at them. So they're very beautiful works.
Very interesting. Meg, I wanted to ask you the kind of a thinking question as we're almost wrapping up here, but at its best, the biennial can reflect, of course, what's going on in contemporary art, but also what's going on in contemporary American culture. What kind of thoughts do you hope viewers leave this biennial with when it comes to reflecting on what it means to be living in America in 2024?
You know, David, I appreciate that question. You know, one of the things that Chrissy and I have really thought about is, you know, what are the takeaways from this show? And Chrissy had mentioned previously the conversation we had with Lahiel Lewis, who has a beautiful film work within the show. And one of the things we had in conversation with her is, you know, what does it mean to come together in a fractured moment? We are obviously within hyperpolarized times. We're at a time in which we feel even further away from each other or isolated through our own media landscapes. And so what does it mean to come together within a moment when maybe we don't necessarily agree with each other, but we're all within the same place? And so that's one of the thoughts we've had around this idea of a dissonant chorus, is having different artists kind of stand on their own in some way. There's a lot of, you know, I'd say Chrissy and I have been incredibly generous with space. So it feels a lot like solo presentations from artists. These are not, you know, just one or two canvases being hung. You're seeing a real kind of dive into an artist practice for some of these artists. For instance, Suzanne Jackson, I think, has, off the top of my head, I think 6 works within the space. And so we really want people to kind of take away, you know, also the sensorial experience of being within a museum. I've talked a lot about ideas with Chrissy around our own love of being a museum goer. If we are not actually curating, we're also in museums. And so what does it mean to take your time to move through a space that is engaging all of your senses, be it sight or sound or touch? There's maybe a little less in the sense of smell, but in some of Jay Phan's work, you can get a little sense of the smell coming off of the works. We really want people to be embodied. Obviously, we spend so much of our times now on screens, on our phones, to come into the museum space and really engage with these forms, this materiality. And, you know, I would argue the expansiveness of oneself. What are ways that we understand maybe different forms of representation that exist beyond, you know, the conversation of figuration?
Well, the 2024 Whitney Biennial is called Even Better Than the Real Thing. It sounds like the subtitle maybe should be Dissonant Chorus. I really like that. This is on view through August 11th. Curators Chrissy Iles and Meg Only, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.